This is Rackabix After Hours.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in. It is episode 105 of Rack Addicts After Hours. 105! Ooh, I like saying the nice numbers. You've got Ben in your ears now, and Pete is here too, the usual crew. Pete, how are you? What have you been doing?
Well, I'm a bit sniffy, a bit bunged up, but I've got to accept it. It's actually a real cold and not COVID.
What, sorry?
A cold.
Not sure what that is.
But I've been tested to the max, literally daily for the last, I want to say, 12 days solidly, and I've been negative all the way.
Both genres of test and nothing to show for it.
Yeah, but they were saying that if you've got a cold, it's most probably COVID, but
apparently not.
Apparently you could actually have a cold.
Then we're all safe and sound in Rack Addict Studios behind our impenetrable wall of duvet armour.
Other than that, I have been trawling the interwebs to purchase items to resolve various issues that I have, so...
Are they modular case-related issues?
Some of them, yes.
Okay, do tell.
Right, my power supply problem from last week. As I had done the calculations on the drawer of all the modules in the black case, which we discussed, and I needed a power supply that could produce enough amps supply all the modules simultaneously, I decided to order a Dofer switch mode power supply from Thomann in Germany.
So the modern one of the remake of the version of the vintage Dofer from way back.
Yes.
Amazing. So
in theory, it should just drop in. It has the same footprint.
Yeah, and for the IEC connector situation.
But also where the little legs where you would screw it.
That will be easy.
Because the circuit board is the exact same size.
Excellent.
Bulk of what was changed in the power supply design was the removal of the toroidal transformer
thing.
And then that was replaced with the little black boxes, which I don't quite know what's inside them, but they're
secrets.
Yes,
lots of secrets.
So some sort of digital technology of sorts.
Relays, transistors, many things possibly. Who knows?
Widgets, things inside those little black boxes
make it
into a switch mode power supply. Anyway, so that is, I wouldn't say winging its way here, because the delivery service between Europe and the UK is particularly
fun
at the moment because COVID, Brexit.
The B and the C words, of course.
And things of that ilk. And just generally the sort of courier companies being overrun. Yeah. And understaffed.
Yep.
And so forth.
And
so
recovering from the festive
theory
period.
Theory was going to arrive tomorrow, but it's anyone's guess. So
but hopefully a nice easy drop-in.
Sometime next week. Yes, unfortunately I've got to demodule the case.
Always tedious.
And then reinstall it. I've also done a bit of a redesign. I haven't done it yet, but I've done it in modular grid.
Oh, rearrange.
Sort of considering sort of ejecting a couple and maybe adding something else.
What's the plan, Stan?
So possibly get rid of the chainsaw.
Oh, but it's cool.
Yeah, I'm just failing to do anything cool with it
in
this particular configuration anyway. Mm. And also that would mean getting rid of the
stereo filter that you got for it.
Well, maybe. That's out anyway.
Oh, okay.
That didn't really complement the digital oscillator that well.
Oh, gotcha. It was the Patching Panda one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Moon Phase.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And also there's the ADSR.
Blue Lantern.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would go. I'm keen to keep the...
Oh, yeah.
The Mimeophone.
Yes, that one.
But it's going to leave me some space. So I'm thinking about possibly one of those polycinematic...
Oh, yeah, the one that we couldn't remember the name of last time.
Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, I didn't know what they were called, but yes.
So I'm waiting... Is it Kubler?
Nobular.
Yes. Okay. So I'm considering the Nobular polycinematic.
A little 8-voice poly. And yeah, you don't need to bother about your extra modulations and filters. It's just all there.
Yes, a complete voice.
With effects, hasn't it, as well?
Yeah, there is a reverb.
Yeah.
But I'd most probably want to put it through more effects.
A good box.
And then...
Ooh, but that's going to break the colour scheme.
I know.
It's got
I'm torn
on
with it. I know.
They're all black.
I know. But it's only a thought. But then also a Disting Mark IV.
What... Why?
Because it can
do everything, of course.
Well, mainly because it can play MIDI files from the SD card. I don't know how effectively it does it, but apparently it can do that amongst everything else.
Oh, of course, because there are expanders with MIDI stuff and all the reconfigurable out. Good point.
It's been out for quite a time. I think it came
the
out.
Mark IV.
Came out in 2017, which is quite a time ago.
And of course, Distings, all considered, have been here for ages.
And when it initially came out, it had 16 different functions.
Is that it?
Well, it's got way more now.
Definitely.
The firmware's been. And apparently, you can code for it if you're that way inclined.
Definitely. I always had the Disting EX floating around my brain because of the ease of use with the Spitfire Labs stuff. And I just had the dreams of having the soft piano in a modular case with something like a Turing machine or the stochastic inspiration generator, and you could just press play and relax in a wave of lo-fi-ish, delicate, ambient piano stuff.
Of course, it can also play samples as well.
Yeah, but that's cheating. No, it's not really. Yeah.
But yes, I'm trying to figure out its MIDI capabilities. It'd be nice if it was actually polyphonic MIDI.
It could be.
It'd be nice if it actually could send out MIDI as in MIDI itself, because the...
Well, the expanders will definitely allow it to transmit MIDI on DIN plugs or 3.5 mils.
That could be interesting, because the Polycinematic has a 3.5 millimeter MIDI, so you could literally be going MIDI to MIDI from between modules.
Looks like some a date with the Disting manuals or general documentation. A date with Disting documentation, because alliteration is fun. That seems to be in your immediate future, perhaps.
Certainly. I mean, the reason this was all triggered was that I was looking at getting the Qubit Surface to replace the rings, but it's a smaller unit, and suddenly that throws the whole dynamic, the case, the spaces again.
Suddenly there's blank HP, and you think, ooh.
I've got to do something with it. So yeah. I have done the plan on Modular Grid. Mm-hmm. I'm contemplating it, but it does mean 4 new modules in total.
Oh my, is that why you're thinking the FP30 might go?
Yeah, well, it's just taking up space as well.
Fair enough.
As well as that, I've also bought some spares for the first time from Cintar in the US.
Oh, wow. Cool. They're household names, aren't they?
I had a requirement for these little slider caps, these Roland little black plastic slider caps.
That was for the Groovebox, wasn't it?
Yes, it's for the MC909. Mm. And I'd inquired with Roland, who had informed me that they were no longer available worldwide, which didn't surprise me.
Makes sense.
But what did surprise me is that there are still products that you can buy from Boss / Roland, which have the white version of those little caps.
Gotcha.
And even those aren't available anywhere worldwide either.
Right.
So I had my email address on a sort of list, or tell me when this comes back in stock, Cintar for them. And I got a notification saying, we have these products in stock. Yeah. And I checked, and they had 5. So I would surmise that they've stripped down possibly an MC505.
Right.
Or there is also another machine that has similar, and only 5 as well. Yeah. So either one of those they've got in and broke it for spares.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought all 5, even though I only need 1.
How greedy of you.
Well, even buying 5, the cost of delivery was 5 times more than the actual component.
Fair enough.
It was because they only use some expedited service, which was $42
for the shipping. Super tracked and super insured,
exactly.
Or something like
that. And I think these things were about $3.75 each. So I bought all 5 because I thought, well, let's get them into the UK and then I could sell 4, and they're like gold dust, so they might go. And also I lashed out on a new knob for my Yamaha Motif XF8.
What happened to that? Did you lose one, drop something?
No, when I got it, it was an X hire machine.
Okay, yeah.
Sort of short-term hire, you know, for the evening. So it was a company that had lots of musical equipment, I assume PAs and also lighting, and it was just for
standard stage keyboards and such.
Yeah, and they decided to out it. I suppose they only kept it so long before they thought, well, I mean, it's still in reasonably good condition, and I've had it quite a few years. But I noticed that one of the knobs, one of the encoder caps, if you want to call it that, was incorrect. It was a replacement, so I thought I'd
treat yourself.
Because I'm also kind of considering getting rid of the XF8 well, possibly. I'm just in a mind to have a bit of a clear out.
And make sure it's all presentable before it hits
the
shelves.
Yes, I'm a bit of a completist. I have to make sure everything's there. I just can't deal with it.
Nice one.
People are just going to give you, if you do it either through reverb or eBay, people are just going to give you grief if there's knobs missing.
The persnickety type.
So, yes, that's what I've been doing, buying bits and bobs.
Small
How
bits
unusual.
And pieces. As you do.
Yes. What? How's your week been?
Well, there's been many a thing, and I had to write them all down because my memory will let go of them quickly. Let me refer to my notes. Excuse me. Aha. Okay, I think I mentioned this, potentially, ages ago, maybe, perhaps, uncertain. Anyway, a mate of mine, John Wilson, the composer, did the Brighton Marathon. And I thought, ooh, yeah, a physical challenge. But I hate running. I don't want to do a marathon. We do have loose plans to climb Ben Nevis this summer, which would be fun. But I thought, what's a cycling equivalent? And there is a milestone, a century, which, of course, 100 miles, 100 kilometres or whatever, but it's actually not that difficult to do. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's not a marathon equivalent in terms of the endurance and preparation for mere mortals. So I did some Googling, and a while back I found the solution. It's called the Fred, or its full name is the Fred Witten Challenge, or the Saddleback Fred Witten Challenge, I think. It's in the Lake District, and it is apparently the toughest sportive that England has to offer. A sportive, by the way, is just a mass cycling event, but it's not a race. There aren't any winners. You just got to try and get round.
Just got to be there.
Yeah, with your legs still on at the end. That's the idea. So, this is a sportive of epic proportions in the Lake District, which is home to Britain's hardest climb, which has sections at over 30%, where you are in danger of pulling a wheelie and falling off backwards, apparently, if you're not careful. So, the specs: 113 miles, which is not much more than the century, which, if it's flat, isn't a tall order. But the tricky part is that it has 3,950 metres of elevation to climb, with many passes at 25% or more. And there it is, the big one. So it's going
to
be scary.
You're going to have to train for that, surely.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't do that rolling off the sofa. So it's a ballot entry, so I've put my name in. And there is priority for first-time riders. And, yes, that should draw on the 31st. So I'll let you know if I have it. And then training must begin in earnest. Yeah, it's going to be tough. But I have an offer of a lending of an indoor trainer that I can use. So I'm not out in the drizzle all week. But I'll keep you updated. Thankfully, the advice and nutritional knowledge of my partner will come in very handy when figuring out how on earth I fuel myself around that course.
What are you going to do to prepare for those type of hills?
So there's a training guide on the website for the event, which is quite helpful because I'm not exactly well versed in training for these things. But I've been doing a bit of reading. Apparently, interval training is really good, but most importantly, getting a lot of quite high power efforts in. And of course, most people will know cycling as a sport, when it's not track cycling, is a power to weight game. So I'll definitely have to shed the belly, which is still residual student life pizza, I believe. Need to shed that, and I guess it will be, you know, they do that kind of lactic acid exposure kind of thing. You've got to get used to having your legs screaming for a long time, so it'll probably be extended high power stuff. So not massively long rides, but hour or 45 minutes, half an hour training sessions, but big power for as long as possible, I think, is the name of the game.
And big hills.
Big simulated hills. I'm sure I can find something in the Surrey Hills to do.
Well, I used to do a 10-mile round trip, regular one, from when I used to live in Old Woking, and I went up to Newlands Corner.
Not ringing the bells at the moment.
Newlands Corner's part of the South Downs.
Okay, yep, that sounds right.
So it was a sort of relatively flat ride until you got to, when you got to the Downs, and then you had to climb.
Yeah,
it was one long climb to the top.
Gotcha.
And then obviously you had the joy of coasting back down afterwards.
Yeah, I think if people are training outside for this kind of thing, they will, you know, find their hill and just go up and down it for a day or something. They'll do that kind of thing.
And I used to do that maybe four times a week, five Ooh, times a week.
Nice.
One stage.
Was that a commute or was it fun?
No, that was for
nice.
For fun.
Good on your legs.
If you can call it fun.
Yeah, no, it's that weird masochistic fun, that one. Type 2 fun, as they call it these days.
I was substantially younger than I am now, and substantially fitter.
I'll have to get you to help me find that hill because I might need it.
Yeah, it's a sort of very long, unrelenting hill. It's quite straight in parts, but it's just straight up. I don't know what gradient it is, but it's...
Yeah, I'll need to find some properly evil steep ones just to get a sense of what that's actually like, definitely. If you know anything about sort of the cycling gearing world, you'll have gears at the front, gears at the back. A normal bog-standard road bike tends to have gears with 11 teeth on your fast end, and on your climbing end, sort of 28. That's on your rear wheel, your cassette. I did speak briefly about my conversion to sort of mountain bike gearing for my own purposes. The cassette I'll be using, which actually all the parts are on their way, more on that later, is an 11 to 50. And the large cog on that, the 50 tooth, is actually bigger than my face. So hopefully that'll let me tackle some beefy hills. But yeah, speaking more of bikes, if I may indulge, the parts, all of the rest of the parts, at last for my conversion are on the way. So my date with the parts shortage in the cycling industry world is hopefully at an end. Fingers crossed. We'll see.
There's still quite a lot of shortages. My daughter went to Curry's PC World to buy an iPad and they didn't have any.
Oh, interesting.
And they gave her the old semiconductor shortage excuse.
Yeah.
I pointed out Amazon seemed to have loads of them.
Yeah. Annoying. Actually, things like that have happened quite a lot. Not generally on stock reasons or whatever, but going into real brick and mortar shops has just felt like a waste of time every time I've done it recently.
I think that's quite often the case these days. I mean, you can invariably find what you want on the interwebs, but just hoping to rock up at some shop, invariably they'll say, sorry, we haven't got it, it's not in stock, we can order you one. And you think, well, I can order it for myself.
Yeah, it's annoying, because you do want to support nice shops, especially if there is, you know, good staff or it's independent and all that. Anyway, I'm pretty sure we've had this rant before. I do have ModCaf news, though we don't have dates for more meets. All the boring legal stuff, well not all of it, but a lot of it has completed, and now we can progress with talking to the Arts Council and getting them on side for our weird project in the wind tunnel.
Is there an estimate on how long the procedure will take?
No, but I'm still hopeful for the first quarter, or at least first half of the year, I think. Should be nice.
So when do you anticipate the recording in the wind tunnel thing?
Not
to go?
A clue.
Second half of this year, hopefully?
Oh, I think the whole thing from application to recording, I think first half of the year, I'm hopeful.
Done and dusted.
In theory.
That'd be interesting.
We'll see. Does rather depend on Mr. Utley's schedule, but we'll see how that goes. Yes. On synthy sort of corners of the world, actually, I'll backpedal a little bit. I've been, in various ways, increasing my attention span and doing less things involving screens. And while trying to cut out screens to some degree, you've obviously got to replace the time you would spend, to use your phrase, navel-gazing, on YouTube. You've got to replace it with something. And I don't know how it happened, but I ended up playing a lot of solitaire, analog solitaire, not just an app, just ages. I think the reasons are similar to why we like our tactile objects. I just liked the feel of shuffling cards and placing cards and moving cards. And it was also solitaire, or patience if you're English. It's basically just shuffling and then resorting, reordering a pack of cards very slowly and in a roundabout way. But it's satisfying. And yeah, the tactile thing kind of hooked me. But what I did is I recorded as quietly as I could be for my breathing and noises and things, but I recorded all of the card flipping and shuffling and moving and placing sounds. Just recorded myself playing solitaire for a couple of hours. The purpose, I hope one day, will be another option for my synth compositions. A standby for me was always radio music, water or rain of some form as a background, lots of reverb on the synth part, and start there and see what happens. So now, maybe some solitaire in the background. I haven't listened back to it yet, but I have a feeling that those sort of textural sounding, feeling sounding feels, found sound feels, founding seals, those noises, I think they'll be quite satisfying in the same way that the little sort of choppy noises that you get from things like the Spitfire Lab soft piano, the bits from the key mechanism that I always enjoy in Nils Frahm compositions. Might have a similar thing. Stay tuned, because if it's good, I'll play some of it and we'll see how it sounds.
So was it a nice, crisp, brand new pack of cards? So they were very...
No, it wasn't. I think more recordings are in my future because, as unfortunately appears to be my nature, I realised I was appreciating the tactile experience of a pack of cards, and then I thought, ooh, these are just random cards. What's a really nice pack of cards? So I got spiraling down into the world of the kind of cards that they'll use at casinos and the difference between poker and bridge cards and plastic versus paper and coatings. And I'm sure I will report back in due course when the end of that journey has come.
What type of cards do conjurers tend to like to use?
From the reviews on some that I've been sniffing out, it seems that most people that like card-based things like the same cards. There might be different preferences for frictional properties, which I would think is more key for magicians in what they have to do with their card fountains and certain tricks that might require delicate shuffling and things. I'm sure your muscle memory needs to get used to the size and friction that cards offer. I think really big card players, poker players, mostly focus on a good feel but durability, because they'll be playing a lot.
Okay.
Yes, I will summarise my findings soon.
It's amazing what deep rabbit holes you can...
They're everywhere.
...pop down just doing something innocent like paying patience.
Yeah, didn't expect it, but thoroughly enjoyed. Now, true to my promise of last episode, when we were talking about titanium, the spork is here. Have a feel of that.
Let me feel your spork.
Because it is odd.
Yes, as you say, it's got a kind of... It is metallic, distinctly metallic, because you can feel the coldness of the metal, but it's got a sort of slightly plasticky finish to it.
It's like those horrible things that came out in one particular era where it was plastic with that horrible rubberized coating on it, so it gave it that soft touch feel.
Yes,
that's not quite as soft or squishy, but there's something about it.
But yes, and I assume that's extremely light. Do you know how much it weighs?
No, because I don't actually care. It's just cool. It's but just I can your, find out for
it's
you.
It's your own piece of titanium.
That's why I've got it. Just
but
because
you say
titanium.
These bike packer types, which, well, you are essentially one of them, do like a lightweight article.
Well, the weight issue is all over cycling. For time trialists and racers, they're just trying to get light bikes and things. It makes more sense to me, well, if you're a pro, obviously, you can do what you want, but you'll have all these amateurs going, oh, I must have the lightest bike in the world, when actually they could probably just get work on their legs a bit. But in the bikepacking world, or touring, when you're chucking tons of weight on your bike, if you can save a bit, it will help you enjoy the scenery and the pleasure of roving a long way.
I also assume that's indestructible as well.
To a certain extent, I imagine it is. Okay, the internet. This is a Vargo titanium ultralight spork. 11 grams, apparently. That's less than the weight of coffee I put in a single serve when I'm brewing coffee.
Yeah, I suppose a steel fork, or spork, I should say, would be a lot heavier.
Probably double, but I don't think it would be too much. But yeah, it would feel lighter. And there we go. The week is updated. Hooray! There is one item of news that I do wish to talk about, and I do wish to talk about it, because it's kind of cool. Erica Synths, I think we reported on it, as we do, a while ago. Do you remember they stopped doing their DIY selection?
Yes.
They've started again, but with a good twist. So they've partnered up with Moritz Klein. I don't know if we should know who he is, but that's the chap. They've named it in a way that doesn't really roll off the tongue, but there's a series of basic modules that will add up to a relatively comprehensive monosynth. They're about 60 euros or pounds each. They are the MKI... xes.edu. That's the series of them. And, you know, there'll be your usual stuff, oscillator, filter, envelopes, all that kind of stuff. But these are kits, by the way. They are focused on the education and the understanding and the knowledge of how it works, which I think is super cool. So they're pretty cheap kits, comparable kits on the low end. If we're talking about the oscillator first, so maybe like the Bufaco Even VCO. That's one that I bought, and it was a good kit. Let's see how much that is from our dear friends. Please sponsor us at Thonk. Yeah, £50.25, excluding VAT on Thonk, this new one that we're going to be talking about.
Has Thonk got all the kits in stock, or are they going to release them sort of...
They're releasing them sort of one after the other. I'm not sure what the time scale is, but at the moment it's just the VCO available, and yeah, in stock now, ready to go.
I suppose they want people to purchase them, build it, absorb the information about how it all works before they move on to the next one.
Yes, indeed. So, can I sort by price? I don't know. That'd be the price range. So, we've got a VCO with barely any outputs there. Oh, yeah, I remember looking at this before. There's the AI Synthesis 011 analog VCO. That's £83, excluding VAT. Still very cheap for an analog VCO. That's a full kit, by the way. Yeah, so you're going to save a good £30, £40, something like that.
Per module.
Hmm, yes. But what you do also gain while saving money, what a great deal, is all this knowledge. So the Bufaco manuals, they're really good, but they're essentially paint by numbers, and they'll probably be 2 pages, and a lot of that will be devoted to how to use this manual. Remember to take breaks, which I'd never do that. A couple of pages. The PDF manual is available now, 52 pages. Just to do this one.
That really is paint by numbers.
Well, no, the paint by numbers would be really short because it's just this resistor value and then they give you the numbers. So it's just a table.
Yeah, I suppose
really.
So here they're explaining this is a resistor. This is how it works. This is what it's doing in this circuit.
Exactly.
Et cetera.
So there's a full schematic there,
okay.
Kind of hand-drawn styly.
This is the circuitry that you're going to be building.
Yeah, and oscillation basics. Goes right through. And for somebody like me who really isn't sure how electricity works... That's tempting and a half. Annoyingly, see, they're aiming at beginners. You still have to have modular stuff. I mean, in this series, they are making a case and power supply available. But still, if you're buying this kit, you're going to have the stuff to go. So, I mean, but yeah, beginners can have
modular anyway. I wouldn't mind just doing a couple of modules just to treat them like sort of refresher courses, just for the sort of understanding side of things, not for the modules themselves per se.
Well, I mean, all the manuals are available, and what's really cool is when they actually get into, you know, making the circuit onto the PCB with the parts that are provided, check it out. They show you how to do the whole thing on the breadboard as well.
Oh, because I was just going to say that. Mm-hmm. You could just get the manuals, and so I suspect I've got most of the components in stock.
Yeah, check this out. Here we go. This is the chapter Building It on the Breadboard. In this kit, you'll find everything you need. A 2.2 nanofarad film capacitor, a 100 kilo-ohm resistor, a small signal diode, type 1N4148. So they're telling you everything you need. You go out and do it yourself. But obviously, beginners, putting a BOM together, that's not too trivial. So get a breadboard and the kit, and you could really lay it out all on there visually before you chuck it on a PCB. I think this is a brilliant idea. Super cool. Ooh, look, a section on buffering, coupling, and listening. I have no idea what any of that is, but...
And you say these manuals are easily downloadable from their website?
I don't know about manuals.
Well, these instruction books.
Mm. What I mean is I don't know about the whole series, because it would make sense that, you know, they maybe make it a little bit more... I don't know, secure or something, because they've obviously put a hell of a lot of effort into this, so they'd want to be making money out of it, and lots of people just being able to download all of them and just get all of it for free. Well, if they can, that's incredibly generous, and thank you so much, Erica Synths and Moritz Klein.
I wouldn't see why they wouldn't do that, because at the end of the day, the sort of people they're aiming at aren't the sort of people that are going to have oodles of component stock and breadboards to hand and all the stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So let's say if I decided to get the instructions for the kit, I'm not their target audience.
Totally.
Or target customer base or whatever you want to frame it. But it'd be interesting because, I, you know, is a possibility I might have everything in stock.
Yeah, who knows? So this is all live on the Erica Synths website. At the moment, like I said, we're only on the VCO at the moment. That's all they've got. Out, scrolling through the website. Yeah, so it's just that one ready to go, and they'll be releasing them as and when. There's an accompanying mod wiggler thread. The user manual is there. There appears to be substantial YouTube content. There's a Sunday live stream from Moritz Klein, an hour and a half of that if you want to go in there. They're pretty simple in their looks as a module, but they're kind of classy. Wouldn't look out of place in your system, not that you'd have any need for something that space inefficient, but yeah, I'm super happy about these.
It's definitely a good gateway for someone who's curious.
I definitely am. Could this be what gets me back into... No, it can't. I've got lots of expenses coming up, but... tempting. Yes, there we go.
Maybe something that you could put on your present suggestion list for friends and relatives when you have a significant
event,
birthday or Christmas, etc.
That is a good plan, Stan. So, go on the Erica Synths website, find Moritz Klein, that's M-O-R-I-T-Z, and then Klein, K-L-E-I-N. Tintin, find them on Tinterwebs, and just go and love them because, yeah, good job.
I'm going to check it out.
Definitely, tell you what, I'll quickly WhatsApp you the link to that user manual, cut straight to the chase.
Even just a bit of light reading at bedtime.
Actually, that would be quite enjoyable. I had a quick peruse and it's very, very nicely written, easy to read, and good hand-drawn stuff. It's got a friendly feel.
Who has written those manuals, do you know?
I think it's Mr. Moritz Klein. I'm going to quickly stalk him, actually.
It's not the gentleman on YouTube that does all the...
Remember that one time when I did a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation for some guy who was making these really good tutorials with a breadboard and lots of drawings, and it was very nicely explained? Oh, wait, it's that guy. Oh, Moritz Klein. Yes, you go, man.
It makes sense.
Excellent. So, go find him on YouTube. That... in fact, will have to be my miscellaneous multimedia recommendation of this week. Again, because, yes, he deserves it. Not that I'm picking up what I'm doing by saying go and look at his YouTube channel. Oh, well, go find him, Moritz Klein on YouTube, and do pass on your congratulations on a really cool project with a great company. That okay. Takes us to the end, I guess. I've done my first. What have you got for us, Pete?
Okay, here's one that you will possibly enjoy quite a bit. You're quite into Journey into the Microcosmos.
Oh, absolutely.
And you actually recommended them as a multimedia recommendation, I believe, in 2020, possibly?
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
It's when we were down one of the parks outside, I seem to remember
quite
you
possibly.
Mentioning. Anyways, that is dealing with the microscopic, but something that is very similar but yes. Deals with the macroscopic is the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute.
Love that aquarium.
So it's abbreviated to MBARI.
Gotcha.
And they have numerous videos that initially look very similar to the microscopic, except they're not microscopic creatures. They're substantially larger,
awesome.
But at extreme depths in the ocean.
I am a huge fan of documentaries like The Blue Planet, but I always enjoyed the deep sea ones. Those are some of my favourites.
Well,
but
that's
super
cool.
These
ones aren't particularly extensive, so basically they will feature... some of them just one creature that they've videoed for maybe just a minute and a half.
Nice.
You know, maybe sometimes slightly longer, 3 minutes at the most. And some of these creatures, one, I've never seen them before. And
yeah.
I've watched a lot of these documentaries. And two, you know, we have these people fantasizing about what you find on other planets. But some of the stuff is completely alien. Just so bizarre. And it's all here on Earth.
Amazing.
So that's my recommendation for this week. The YouTube channel for the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, MBARI.
Lovely
short.
Stuff. Well, it's been a fantastic 105th episode of Rack Addicts After Hours. Do please find us at Rack Addicts UK on various social medias, and you have an excellent start to your 2022. Farewell.